we've made more runs in the postseason than any other school in the country. So obviously to have, you know, teams that are consistently competing and winning national championships, getting to Final Fours, you know, some of the best coaches at our level that work here, not that we didn't have that at Keene State, but the type of people that they're able to, you know, bring in here and keep here and retain here, it was definitely exciting.
Welcome back to another episode, Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison, here, as always, with my co-host, Neruda Perdomo. We got a great episode for you today. But first, Ruda, I see you back in Utica in college. So talk to me about, you know, your plans for NYE. We're recording on NYE. And if you have any New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Right now, like you said, I'm back in Utica. We started practicing yesterday. So we have our first conference game on January 7th. So we've just been preparing. We're just going to start preparing for that. And it feels good to be back tonight. Still to be determined. There's two options I'm thinking about right now in terms of, you know, where me and my friends are headed. But, I think we're going to stay local, though, stay in the area and just, you know, have a safe night with the guys. But I think for resolutions, I don't know, man, just stay healthy. You know what I'm saying? Keep staying close with family. That's really important to me. So just making sure that's, you know, I keep that really close to the chest and keep them close to my heart. Make money and keep growing the pod, bro. That's pretty much it.
No, I feel that. Make money and keep growing the pod. I'm with that. Yeah. The money's starting to roll in. We got a few things going for us right now, so just gotta stay locked with that. But to talk about basketball a little bit, we had a holiday tournament. We're with Albright College. We beat Albright the first day, which is a great win. And I don't know if that had an effect on day two, but we got smacked by Muhlenberg. Coach Hopkins, who we got a little connects with, but he runs a great program at Muhlenberg. They were a good team, but they smacked us. I don't think they're 24 points better than us, but either way, we lost in the chip game. So we got some things to work on. You got to be good on back-to-backs, and we weren't. So it was a good learning lesson for us, but definitely felt good getting a win at Albright. It was a crazy game. One by two, it was the longest 20 seconds of my life. They were like turnovers, fouls, everything. So
yeah,
definitely good to get a win out there. But
would you think of playing like PSAC schools? You know, not, I don't know if they're in the PSAC, but playing like Pennsylvania or like out of state schools like that.
Albright, I don't know what college, or they're in the MAC Commonwealth, and it seemed like they were just like an athletic, like get after it type of team, and that was definitely like they were trying to bully us, which, you know, credit to them, we caught the dub. But Muhlenberg, I don't know if this is just like the centennial, but it was like a lot of spread offense, five out concepts, and it was challenging to guard. We had to get out of the man early, and we went into zone, and they lit that up even more. So I don't know if that's just a Coach Hopkins scheme or if that's like a centennial type of thing, but it definitely was different basketball compared to like New York basketball. I don't know if it's just strictly concepts, but it definitely was like a little bit different.
Yeah.
But New Year's resolutions, I'll go quick. I just want to be really goal-oriented and stay disciplined to, you know, completing those. I feel like towards the end of the semester, I was like becoming lackadaisical, making excuses on why I couldn't do something or finding another thing to do in place of the main priority. But, you know, I'm gonna start with the soft 90-day challenge and just stay locked in with that, hopefully build some more discipline within my life. But definitely hope Not Even D2 keeps growing. It's been a great journey this year, and, you know, we're back to it right now. Like, starting the new year, we got Coach Kane, who's leading Coach Hopkins right now. They're 4-4 going into centennial play. But, I mean, he's just been a winner throughout his career. I mean, one of the GOATs at WPI, and then he coached at WPI with Chris Bartley, a legend in the game. And then he went to Keene State, and, you know, that's kind of where Coach Kane grew his platform. He was a really good coach leading Keene State to a few really good years in the LEC. And we talked about a lot with Coach Kane, so I want to hear what you got to say about Coach and this episode.
I thought it was a great episode, man. I had a really good time talking to Coach Kane. Shout out Coach Kane for being very patient with us, too. We had, you know, plan. We've been trying to schedule this episode for the last couple of weeks, and just because of, you know, final schedule with us, or, you know, Johns Hopkins, you know, traveling schedule, it just, you know, we had to keep putting it off, but we finally got it done, and I'm excited we did, because like I said, it was a great conversation. I mean, back to back Little East champions at Kane State, right? They went to the Elite Eight with Coach Kane. They went to the Sweet 16, and that, with that year, you know, when they had Jeff Hunter, Brito, Nate Seau, Spencer, all those guys, and then they went to the Elite Eight with Ty and them. When they lost to Babson in the national championship. So he's been around, man. They lost to Babson who eventually went to the national championship, excuse me. But he's been around, man. He's seen a lot of basketball, right? He's been around a lot of great basketball, you know, especially like you said, he's a legend at WPI. He was a great player, All-American for them. He stayed around the program as an assistant coach with Coach Bartley at WPI, who's a legend himself at over there. And then he built a program at Keene State, man. And, you know, I talked to him a little bit about this off air, I think. Like, I grew up in Exeter, right? So I would, you know, sometimes go to Keene State and stuff like that for AAU tournaments and stuff. And, like, the facilities they have there, like, it's still pretty good for a D3 facility. But he built, like, a powerhouse of a D3 school all the way up in little old Keene, New Hampshire. You know what I mean? And you got to respect stuff like that. So now, you know, he has the opportunity to coach a high academic school at a great program like Johns Hopkins, where they have a great athletic department and he's supported by everyone there to be successful. So I really can't wait to see what Coach Kane does. Like you said, it was a great conversation. I'm excited for the viewers to listen to what he has to say.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Kane is a winner. I said that earlier, but what I think is one of his best traits in this coaching game is his ability to adapt. And why I say this is, like, WPI to Keene State, that's a crazy difference in schooling. Like, WPI is an academic and, you know, engineering type of school. And then Keene State, I don't want to profile anybody, but it's a lot different from engineers. And then from Keene State to Johns Hopkins, now you're moving from Keene State to one of the highest academic schools in Division III. And throughout all three schools, I mean, he's just in his second year at Hopkins, but three programs he's been a part of, and he just continues to win and win and win. And another thing, like, he's able to adapt with different players, because when you talk about the different personalities in a player like Ty versus a player like Jeff, who, you know, we've been around both of them and they act completely different, but both of them speak super high about Coach Kane and their relationship, how much of an influence he had on them. So you got to respect coaches that, you know, can win at different places and can relate to the players in different ways. And I think that's going to drive him in his next chapter at Hopkins. And I wanted to talk a little about the Centennial. I know I didn't prep you for this, but just looking at, like, the teams in there, I didn't even know Muhlenberg was in the Centennial until I'm looking at it right now. But that conference is stacked. And, I mean, Hopkins is seventh right now. I know they haven't gotten to too much conference play, but seventh right now in the conference. And that just, like, Hopkins is a really, really good program led by, like we just said, a great coach. So I don't know if you have any extended thoughts about this conference, but I mean, it's loaded and it doesn't get talked about that much in D3.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely doesn't. I'm looking at the conference standings right now. I mean, I know for a fact that Gettysburg is ranked in at least in the top 15 this year. Swarthmore is always in the tournament. I'm pretty sure they lost in the second round of the tournament last year to Trinity. They were in our pod. Obviously, you just played Muhlenberg. Muhlenberg's a really good team. Franklin and Marshall's a really good team. Dickinson is a, you know, well-coached program. And I know Washington College, shout out my guy, Coach Begley. He just got hired over there a couple summers ago, so he's changing that program around. But, I mean, yeah, it's a great conference, bro. A lot of underrated conferences out there in D3, but for sure, I don't hear a lot of, like, we were talking about preseason predictions and stuff like that. Like, I know I didn't bring up the Centennial Conference, and I'm looking at this, it's like, I see 9-1, 9-2, 7-3. Like, there's some pretty good teams, and Johns Hopkins has had a tough schedule, but they're still a pretty good team, and they're overall, you know, standings wise, they're towards the bottom. I'm sure in conference play, they're going to finish towards the top, but yeah, it's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this a lot, like the competition and the parity in Division III that continues to grow is really remarkable, because like it wasn't always like that. There was, you know, the NESCATs controlling, or the UAA, like it's a clear favorite who's going to win. But now in like every conference, you have contenders that can compete at the end of the season in postseason play, which always makes, you know, the games better. But I mean, Hopkins, they're dealing with a lot of change. Like we talked about it in the episode, but their best player from last year, he transferred to Division I, and now Hopkins kind of has to revamp themselves. It was unexpected. So I mean, I believe that Coach Kane is one of the best coaches in Division III, just how he's able to relate to players, connect with players, and you know, just build winning cultures regardless of the program he's at. But I mean, we talked about a lot with Coach Kane regarding his days at Keene State, WPI, and now Hopkins. You know, some stories about our guys, Ty Nichols and Jeff Octavio's coming on the pod soon. So I mean, it was just a really good episode. We covered a lot. So definitely, if you like this episode, subscribe. If you think Coach Kane is going to lead Johns Hopkins to a centennial chip, leave a like and enjoy the episode. All right, we are here with Coach Kane. How you doing today, Coach?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Excited to get you on, Coach. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing today. What does Friday look like for Coach Kane?
Yeah, so kind of transitioning into the holiday here. So we're going to get the boys over to school. You know, I have a first grader and a pre-K. So it's getting one on the bus and it's getting the other one over to daycare for the morning. And then after that, head into the office and try to get going on some kind of advanced scouting type stuff to get ready for second semester.
Yeah, I want to talk about being a father during the holidays, but real quick, how do you go about like your scouting? Like, what are you looking for in other teams? Like, do you look at player tendencies? Are you looking at full games? Just talk to me about your scouting process.
Yeah, it's all that stuff. You know, we definitely look at, you know, box scores and some analytics to try to get some player tendencies. You know, I'd say our defense is probably, you know, a bit more kind of like read and react based, right? Like we're going to try to take away what the team wants to do and what individual players want to do. So we're very much, you know, watch games, you know, look at stats, try to get a sense for what guys are trying to do and what teams are trying to do, and, you know, adjust how we're playing defensively for that game based on the team that we're playing against. You know, we obviously have some things that we consistently go through throughout an entire season. So as you start to put a couple game plans together, I think our guys start to get a sense of, you know, this is how we guard this type of player, this is how we guard this type of action or this type of system. So as you go through a season, there tends to be a lot of similarities from, you know, a game-to-game basis. You know, we won't guard everybody the same way, but we're definitely using a lot of the same things as we go from individual players in different teams.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about that a little bit, like just talking to various coaches. Like I feel like some of the, you know, the cultures or the programs that are winning a lot are the teams that they don't have to switch so much of their game plan depending on the opponent. It's like our stuff is relatively the same, no matter who we're playing against. So I can definitely see that a little bit.
Yeah, you don't want to make it too complicated, but you also don't want to be so simple that teams can kind of pick up on your tendencies, come up with a game plan and attack your defense in a way where you're not ready to adjust. You know, like I think everyone's going to kind of come in with game plans to try to figure out ways to get good shots. And then it's, you know, kind of like how can you make adjustments on the fly and work with your team to take that away?
Yeah. Going back real quick. So you mentioned you got two young kids. What are they into over the holidays? What gifts are you going to be buying for Christmas?
Yeah. So my oldest is starting hoops. You know, he's played some baseball. We have like T-ball and some pickup baseball here in town. He's done some soccer, both here in the Baltimore area as well as up in Keene. So it's his first taste of basketball last weekend. You know, he's always kind of shot and played because of, you know, me being kind of what I am. But then when we moved here, there was we had a neighbor who's, you know, 11, 12, 13. And he's very much into hoops. And that's what got my son more so into basketball. Like you would think he'd be in it because of me, but he got more into it because of our neighbor. So he had his first practice last weekend. And I was pumped to see, like, you know, he got a basket or something. I think it was like 4-0 in a little scrimmage that they played. So not a lot of action. But it was great to see, like, he was like old school defense, right? Like, you know, active hands, sliding his feet, He went from like guarding the ball to guarding the ball to guarding the ball a little bit too much. I can say like he had quick feet. Nobody was getting by him. And so he's getting into hoops. I have a Michael Jordan hot numbers basketball card like in my drawer in my room. And every once in a while, like he'll go to that and take it out. And he like asks me questions about like basketball cards and what they are and what this is. So I ended up getting him like a set of basketball cards from like the year that, you know, they like that hot numbers Jordan card was from. I basically got him that pack. So we'll spend like a, you know, one pack a day for a little while after the holiday, open up some cards. But that was something we got him. I think we got him a silent basketball. Hopefully he doesn't watch this pod before the holiday to spoil the surprise. But yeah, so we're into that kind of thing. He's very much into sports, very active. Yeah, definitely a lot of what he's getting probably revolves around like being outside and playing sports and doing things like that. And then, you know, our younger one, like, you know, it's amazing. You see it, right? Like my brother and I are a lot different and our two kids are definitely a bit different. You know, the other one's a lot more timid and shy, but also like kind of the rule breaker, whereas our oldest is a rule follower. You know, John had a Christmas list, right? About 15 things. You know, our other son won't tell us anything that he wants. He says, Santa knows and I'll get what I'll get. So like he's the kind of the tough one to buy for. So we're surprising him. Like he's more of like a truck, puzzle, book kind of guy. So we're going that direction with our little one. They'll be off after today. So hopefully I can step away a little bit. You know, I never really fully turn it off, but hopefully I can step away and spend some time with the boys and see some family and do some good stuff for a few days here.
That's dope. That's dope. I really mess with that. And I want to bring it back too to when you were younger. I want to talk more about your WPI days. Now, at WPI, you are a legend. You coach with a legend with Coach Bartley. You know, he's really built an amazing program over there. I have a lot of respect for him and what he does. But more so you were All-American and you graduated in 2007 from WPI. You went to the NCAA tournament three times. You were NUMAC's 25-year anniversary team. Like I said, you were D3 Hoops All-American in 2007, 89-20 overall record. So I'm just kind of curious. I know KJ and I were talking about this. Did you ever think about like pursuing a professional basketball career after you were done playing at WPI?
Yeah. I just had an incredible opportunity, whether it was high school or college, just playing for incredible programs and incredible coaches. My high school coach just recently retired as the all-time winningest coach in Massachusetts State High School basketball history. And then to go over and play for Coach B, you know, very lucky, you know, got in early in his time there. It was funny because I watched them play quite a few times my senior year in high school, and I never so I probably saw them play six or seven times, but I never saw them win. Coach B was like, you know, the most tenacious recruiter I've ever seen, right? They were at literally everything. You know, I was getting multiple handwritten letters, you know, a week kind of going through the recruiting process. I think there were points where he was writing me about the bowling alley on campus and telling me how great that space was, you know, just to give you a sense that he literally had nothing else left to talk about that we started getting the bowling alleys. Yeah, I just found like the right guy at the right time with the right teammates and had an incredible experience. You know, not sure I would have probably played the role on the team now that I did back then, right? You know, with the way that he established the program and how many talented players are in that program these days. As you mentioned, I had a chance to coach with them after and very fortunate to have that opportunity to definitely help with my transition to get into coaching full time. I thought about playing when I was done. I had such a great experience at WPI. You know, obviously like really good school. Didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do when I graduated, but ended up kind of taking the summer playing a lot of like pro-am type leagues and really thought I was going to go overseas, had some different offers, different places, likely would have probably gone to Germany if I ended up, you know, going to play overseas. But had an opportunity to take an engineering job not far from Worcester and get into coaching. Had never left that Worcester area. My high school was further away from my house where I grew up than WPI was. So definitely very much a homebody at that point. You know, coming to Hopkins was really my first time kind of moving and living outside of New England. So it was a lot to think about, like going overseas. You know, I always thought that's what I wanted to do and would do. And the other side of it was I knew if I had done it, I probably would still be doing it to this day. And not sure necessarily that was the direction that I wanted to go. You know, definitely family oriented and, you know, it was a lot to think about, like going away and being away for that extended period of time. So get into coaching, and you know, I think it led me down a path where I was able to, you know, make that transition and do this, you know, whatever, for a job. I don't think it's a job I love every day. You know, very fortunate to be in it and have a perspective that may be a little bit different after working in engineering and coaching for an 8-year period before I was able to make the transition into basketball full time. So have a unique perspective, I think, of what the real world could be like. And I had a great experience with engineering and worked for some really good guys. But definitely, you know, my calling is to be in hoops. You know, I love basketball as much as anybody and just, you know, love working with student athletes and, you know, couldn't ask for a better job if that's what you call it.
So I'm kind of curious, you keep talking about you being an engineer, and what I'm curious about is you were doing like a full-time job while coaching or whatever you're doing in the engineering field. Is there any similarities or things you were using in one field that would transition into the other, or what was that like? Because I'm a communications student, and you know, that's the biggest part in basketball, especially as a point guard, just being able to lead your guys, communicate with everyone on the court. So did you notice anything that engineering helped you with?
Yeah, I mean, WPI engineering, like there's not a lot of, you know, like writing, you know, aside from the major projects that you did, there wasn't a lot of writing that we kind of focused on. A lot of it was obviously, you know, science and numbers. And I think these days with where analytics has gone, where you see basketball has gone, obviously the talk, you know, now is too many threes and viewership is down because of it. And obviously a lot of that revolves around the analytics and efficiency offensively. I do think there's similarities in terms of those numbers, right? And digging into those numbers and using analytics to build your defense and your offense and make decisions as you go throughout games, or even just, you know, practice to practice and the things that you might need to work on. So that's probably the biggest thing is, you know, just being a numbers guy and enjoying and loving those numbers and using those numbers in a way to inform decisions. And I think, you know, with engineering, you're definitely very structured and regimented. And I think, you know, in coaching, all the different things that are on your plate that you have to manage your time around, you know, definitely help from that standpoint as well.
Yeah. And I want to go back to, you know, WPI days. So you were on staff for 8 seasons. You guys made the tournament 6 out of those 8 seasons, and in all 8 of those seasons, 20-plus win seasons. So, like, continued success. I saw, like, from your playing career and your coaching career there, you have, like, a over 75% winning percentage, which is just absurd. So what was it about, like, WPI or what Coach Chris Bartley was doing that allowed you guys to be so successful during your time playing and coaching there?
Yeah, he's just an old school kind of guy in terms of like work ethic, intensity. Like he was very process oriented. You could see his passion for the game of basketball, literally every rep, every play. And I think, you know, same could probably be said about, you know, the way I played basketball. You know, I think it was a really good match that way where, you know, neither of us took possessions off. You know, we didn't really do walkthroughs in high school. So by the time I got to college, you know, I treated walkthroughs almost like they were, you know, games. And I'm like diving out of bounds for balls, like falling into ball racks. I maybe shouldn't have said dive. It's probably more of a fall. Probably wasn't always the most coordinated guy as I got fired up. But it was just a guy that was like very passionate about everything, every single rep, every single practice, everything we did at a high level. And I think that's the type of player that I was and the type of coach that he is. And it was a really good, you know, compliment to each other, I think, to really try to build the foundation of WPI basketball. And I think the same can be said for Coach B today. You know, he still hasn't taken a possession off, still hasn't taken a practice off. He very much is process oriented. You know, that consistency is the hardest thing to do in sports. And obviously he's found a really impressive recipe for that consistency. You know, a team that is consistently winning 20 games, having opportunities to get into the NCAA tournaments and make runs in the tournament. You know, no one's done it better probably over the last, you know, 20 something years that Coach B has been the head coach at WPI. You know, I think they're in the top 3 or 5, if not higher, in terms of winning percentage over that duration. You know, so very impressive what he was able to do. And it was a really perfect match for me with, you know, kind of how I approached the game as a player, you know, coming out of high school and into college. It was the perfect match just in terms of that intensity and, you know, the level of competition that I think he expected, that I was looking for, that we were able to kind of, you know, build that foundation together at that program.
You talk about the intensity and consistency, and it brings me back to, so I actually play, so I'm from Exeter, New Hampshire, and I play like in like pro-ams, or like not pro-ams, but like summer tournaments down in like Boston and stuff like that. And some of the WPI guys will be like playing at these tournaments. And even like a summer league, like these guys are still like playing hard as hell. And Coach B will sometimes be at the games, like at the top of the stands, just like watching them. You know what I'm saying? And it's interesting. You could just see how much they respect him and how much, you know, knowing guys on that team, how much they do want to play hard for him. So I'm hearing everything that you're talking about for sure.
Yeah, it becomes a lifestyle, right? It's not something that you do for like one possession. It becomes something that you do in everything you do on the basketball court. It's just the culture that he's created there that definitely, you know, extends. It's those lessons that you learn by playing for someone that extend, you know, for the rest of your life that you can apply in everything that you do. And it's not something you turn off when you're done playing for him. It's something that you keep going. It's why I probably don't play as much these days. You know, when I a couple years ago when my son was first born, I was playing in men's leagues, and it was actually against some WPI guys. We're playing the championship of a men's league, right? So a couple of my WPI guys bailed on me, and I was a little bit past my prime and forced to play in back-to-back games, including the championship game. So I was trying to do a little bit more than most other games that I was playing at that point in my life. And I ended up going like over a handoff on an under out of bounds play. Could not turn it off defensively. The way I played it, whatever I was, 32 is the same way I played when I played for Coach B. I ended up blowing my Achilles. And I'm afraid that if I play a lot now, the same thing will happen. I'll still have the WPI in me and won't be able to turn it off at all. And I'll either blow it again or blow the other one. So I don't play as much as I used to for that reason. Because if I do, there's only one gear that I have. And that's like the WPI basketball gear. So
do you still get like shots up and stuff like that, even though you're not like playing pickup and stuff or no?
Yeah, I'll still shoot a bit. I mean, I don't do it anywhere near as much now. You know, like you think as a basketball coach with the access to a gym, like literally within walking distance to your office or access to a weight room, that it just becomes like part of your day. But unless you prioritize it and like manage your time, like you can always find something else that you want to do, another clip that you want to watch, another practice that you want to see, another, you know, game film that you want to watch, like whatever it might be, there's always something to do. So I try to do it every once in a while. I don't do it as much as I used to. You know, I was the kind of guy that'd be getting up, you know, 1,000 shots a day, if not more. But safe to say, I don't do that anymore. And, you know, I really enjoy it when I can, but don't do it as often. But what I really do look forward to is getting out with my son, you know, like my kids, like, you know, shooting around with those guys, rebounding for them, you know, playing some one-on-one, doing those kind of things. So that'll be, I think, the extent of my basketball moving forward is probably my time with my boys.
Hey, Coach, you just got to get ready for when he starts asking to play one-on-one. That's it. You got to get ready for that.
Yeah, I've been trying to get in shape. Like, this is like a progression here. I've been doing more running with Jeff Hunter. Now that he's on staff, I have a running buddy. And that's all in preparation for those one-on-one games with my kids. I can't embarrass myself.
That's amazing. I love that. So I wanted to bring it back again to, you know, Keene State days. And like you said, you were on staff for WPI for 8 years, and you guys had a great run while you were on the staff for WPI. But you got hired as head coach for Keene State in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So just talk about how that opportunity kind of came up, your memories during that time about, like, you know, the hiring process and just how you built the culture early on in your days at Keene State.
Yeah, it was a bit of a unique one. I actually found out about the opportunity from Coach B while I was on my honeymoon in Anguilla. So we were there for 2 weeks after I got married, and Coach B texted or called me and said, you know, Keene State's going to open. You know, I know the coach. I talked to him, talked to Rob. He ended up in a tough situation. You know, he ended up getting let go for some things that had happened in the past. Really good guy, really good coach. They were actually coming off a Little East Conference tournament championship. They had actually come here to Hopkins and lost in the first round to Hopkins in the NCAA tournament that year. Kind of funny, like full circle there. You know, the last game that Keene State played before I was the coach was against Hopkins, and that's the opportunity that I ended up leaving for. But heard about that and definitely, you know, talked to my wife. I was ready to make that transition to basketball full time. In a kind of a unique situation where they weren't going to open the job on a permanent basis. They were opening it up on an interim basis and really weren't even putting it out there. You know, they were kind of taking applications kind of behind the scenes. They didn't have an athletic director at the time. The athletic director was let go with the coach that was there previously. So the VP of Student Affairs ultimately was the hiring person in that situation. You know, Coach B emailed him for me, and as soon as Coach B reached out, you know, I got a response that they wanted to speak with me. Went through a pretty quick interview process there. I'd say really the thing that probably put me over the top was I connected with the players during my interview. You know, and probably one guy in particular, Nate Stitchell, was kind of the pulse of the team at that point. He's a guy that's actually in basketball himself now. He's the player director, director of player development for FDU. So he's at the Division I level. He was an assistant at Keene State last year with Jeff, and then got the opportunity over at FDU this offseason. He was in a great place. Had a chance to watch those guys play Nova the other night. So I think that was probably the thing that put me over the top, was the connection I made with the guys during the interview process. Inherited a really good team. Like I said, you know, a team that had won the conference championship the year before, brought everybody back, but their leading scorer, Tom Doyle. So I had a, you know, really veteran group of returning guys that I think had high expectations. You know, we started off and it, you know, it looked easy early. You know, we won our first seven games and we were cruising, scored 100 a couple times. We were playing fast, you know, playing reasonable defense and scoring a lot. And then in the eighth game, we had one guy miss the game with a concussion. We had another guy tear his ACL in the game. Our starting point guard was Lucas Hamill, whose father was the head coach at Merrimack for quite an extended period. And he had a very similar personality to his dad. So we struggled that game. We lost for the first time. We had all those injuries, and he was a little bit frustrated after the game. So he decided to take his frustration out in a metal locker. And safe to say, the metal locker won that fight. So he ended up missing quite an extended period of time. So we went from, you know, being small and athletic and fast, and then basically in one game had four or five injuries, and some of those being either season ending or extended periods. So we went from being small and fast to playing like, you know, five guys that are like 6'5" and bigger. Yeah, we had like two or three centers on the court at a time. The next game that we played after losing to UMass Boston was against UW-Stevens Point. They were coming off a national championship. You know, we played a game against those guys. I think that was like, you know, a double overtime game. Lost to Loras the next night, a similar type game. And we ended up going from 7-0 to 13-10. So over that next stretch, we were, what, 6-10. You know, so at first I thought, you know, I left, you know, engineering and left, you know, WPI, a lifestyle that I was pretty comfortable in what was, you know, I can't lose situation almost. And then, you know, you go through some speed bumps with all those injuries and a little bit of a rocky time, and you go from 7-0 to 13-10. It's like, you know, what did I do? You know, like, did I put myself in a bad spot where I'm not going to get this job on a permanent basis? But luckily, you know, with Nate and those older guys on that team, we had incredible leadership. We had a kid on that team by the name of Ty Nichols, you know, who guys have probably seen in the TBT. And it was kind of neat because, you know, obviously we had to really rely on Ty a lot more. He wasn't starting as a freshman for us because of the talent that we had with that group, the number of returners that we had. And then with those injuries, we slid him into the starting lineup and he really grew as a player. And ended up being the guy as a freshman that we put the ball in his hands in the conference tournament championship game every time and let him make plays and make decisions, which is probably pretty rare, you know, on a team that's that good in a championship game to have that kind of player. So we were lucky that in some ways we did go through what we went through because, you know, it gave him the opportunity, I think, to grow and develop maybe in a way he wouldn't have otherwise. So guys got healthy. We ended up winning, you know, what was it, seven games in a row, including the conference tournament championship and the first two rounds of the NCAAs to get to the Sweet 16. So after what was a little bit of a rocky kind of middle portion of our season, ended up being a really successful year, got the job on a permanent basis. You know, had incredible success early with that group, that veteran group kind of, you know, around Ty and the guys that were already there before Ty. You know, so we were in the NCAA tournament three of those 4 years when Ty was with us, you know, made multiple Sweet 16s, won multiple conference championships and had a great run. And then after Ty graduated, you know, we had one kind of tough year, but that tough year was a really good building block kind of for the team moving forward. That was Jeff Hunter's freshman year. You know, went out to Great Lakes and, you know, kind of got our butt kicked in that tournament, you know, tournament that I think is as good as any at our level. Kind of gave us a sense of what, you know, the best teams in Division III look like. You know, got some really good pieces around Jeff, kind of went through COVID, you know, with that young group. And then, you know, kind of on the backside of COVID, coming out of COVID, had, you know, a really talented group with some very good players that figured it out and came together and had a nice run, you know, to finish up my time at Keene. So nothing but fond memories that of Keene State. Great place to coach, great place to play. You know, the environment at Keene State is a really cool one. It's a real college town, and the community really rallies around the program. So lots of sold-out games and cool environments to play in. at Keene State. Still that way, obviously, to this day.
It's kind of crazy, like, the stories you just brought up, because we talked with Ty and Jeff, because we were at the TBT with them. We talked with them, and they basically were telling us the same stories about, like, Jeff was talking about how his freshman year, like, was very beneficial for the next 4 years of his college career, just because, like, you guys weren't that good. It taught him a lot. And then, you know, I'm glad you brought up Ty, because I kind of want to talk about him. Like, you said you gave him the ball, and that's where Ty flourishes. And one thing I wanted to bring up, you were talking about how, like, at WPI, it's constant, like, bring your all, do it all. It doesn't matter if it's a game, practice. But, you know, Ty's the opposite. Like, he said he's not really good in practice. He didn't really care about practice. So how was that coaching him? Because you have this, like, determination, and, you know, you might be screaming at guys in practice, but Ty's just, like, chill, relax, like, I don't really care. So what was that like coaching him early on?
Yeah, safe to say there was definitely some of that passion that came out towards Ty early in his time at Keene State. When I took over the job, the coach before me, Rob Colbert, just an awesome guy, did a tremendous job at Keene State. He had a lot of early morning practices, you know, so we kept some of those early morning practices. The schedules were strange. As I took over, it was really hard to find practice time. So we had a lot of 5:30 a.m. practices. I mean, you know, if you talk to Ty, you probably get the sense pretty quick. He's not a morning guy.
He's so, not getting up for them.
I can't even tell you the number of times that, you know, he was late, where we had some issues with him, you know, relative to those early morning practices, and how many times the team spent running for him. You know, there were some challenges there. You know, like, there was a bit of a disconnect between him and some of the other guys at times, but I think everyone saw his talent. He definitely was the kind of guy, when the ball went up on game day or even in a practice, like, once it was time to compete, like, he always, like, once it was time to play live, like, turned it up. But if you were going through drills or doing things that he necessarily, like, didn't love the competition of what you were doing, he wasn't the same guy always, you know. And I think you had to be pretty transparent with the teams that he was on, that Ty is different, right? And we need to rally around him for what he is. You know, he's not the most vocal leader. You know, he did some things at times off the court that you wouldn't necessarily say were the ideal things. He wouldn't get in trouble, right? But he Ty's his own person, and you have to embrace that and respect that and treat him as such. But also, like, make sure that, you know, the standards are clear, right? And, like, if you know, you're going to have a guy like Ty, you need to embrace what he's great at and acknowledge maybe what he's not as good at, right? So Ty might not have been the best drill guy, but if you needed Ty to guard any player on the other team, he would do it in a second. Ty was the guy that got every loose ball. Ty was the guy that got every rebound when the game was on the line, right? Ty was the guy that made every right decision. You know, like, he averaged 28 points a game as a senior, but he was incredibly efficient, you know, shot over 50% from the floor, shot over 40% from three. You know, a guy that made 7 threes as a freshman, you know, made like 8 threes in the first half of a conference semifinal game and shot over 40% as a senior. You know, so he loved it more than anybody, worked at it more than anybody, competed as hard as anybody. But there were times where just he wasn't the best version of himself in a drill or in a 5-on-0 situation. And we tried to hold a standard where, you know, this is what is acceptable and this is what's not, but also, you know, embraced what he was great at and very transparent that some of these things he wasn't as good at. And that group, I think, really, really rallied around it. Now, again, another example of it not always being easy. Like, the start of our year, we were probably, you know, 500 or slightly above 500 for a period of time. And then as we kind of came to that conclusion that, you know, let's embrace Ty for what he is, acknowledge what he's not. I think Ty did a really good job of stepping up in some of those moments too, and trying to, like, you know, address some of those areas that may not have been his strength. You know, we won 15 straight, won the regular season, won the conference tournament championship, and get back to the NCAA tournament. And in most years, he's the national player of the year. It just so happened that Ashton Francis was a senior that same year and scored 60-something in the Elite Eight to take his team to the Final Four. That broke the single-season scoring record in Division III. So I think safe to say that guy was the National Player of the Year over Ty. But in most years, that's probably Ty's award. So, yeah, you know, very different coaching, different people and different players. And I think that's one thing I learned early. I think Coach B was good at it. But one thing I definitely learned as a head coach myself, that you have to kind of manage and treat everybody different. I don't think you can – change what the standards are, but I think in terms of how you coach people, you can coach them a little bit different while not sacrificing what those standards are and being really transparent with your group. You know, I think everyone, like if the information's out there and you don't hide things from your team and you're all working for the same thing and care about one another to accomplish a common goal, then I think you can manage things different as long as you're not sacrificing what those standards are and holding, you know, one person to this standard and another person to that standard. That's where I think you can kind of muddy the waters a bit. As long as you're transparent and rally around guys, you know, in a positive way, then I think you can work towards that common goal.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to our boy Ty because he's going crazy right now overseas. And also shout out to you because, you know, a lot of coaches want to have that presence. Like, no, this is my program. Like, if you're not going to follow my rules or do it exactly my way, then, you know, I might sit you for a game. But Ty's like a basket. He can guard. So why would you take your best player out to prove an example when that's like ultimately going to negatively affect the team? And like you said, he wasn't doing nothing that's like getting him in trouble or anything. So I got a lot of respect for both of you. And, you know, moving on. So I want to talk about a different group. So the Jeff and Octavio, like that dynamic duo. But, you know, they kind of created a dynasty at Keene State. They're trying to go for four-peat right now. You weren't there last year, but, you know, you won back-to-back LEC championships with them. First year in 21-22, you guys were 21-7. The next year, 28-2, which was a crazy year. So I just want to hear about, you know, those 2 years and the luxury of coaching great players like Octavio and Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, really, really fortunate. You know, obviously, I think Octavio was kind of the missing piece of that group. You know, like we were good without him, but you bring him into that group. You know, you have Jeff, obviously, with the size, the athleticism, you know, just an incredibly great leader, you know, something that I think he really learned and developed himself. You know, he deserves so much credit for the type of person and type of leader that he became. You know, something we had talked a lot about, and he took it to an extreme that I almost thought I never could have imagined and could be more proud, you know, to see what that growth looked like over his career. You know, had an awesome group of guys around Jeff. You know, like the class below him was just, you know, fantastic players, fantastic people, you know, perfect additions to the program that fit really well. Then you bring in Octavio, who, you know, was kind of that COVID recruit that, you know, is good, but you're not sure how it's going to translate because, you know, you can watch a guy on video all you want, but don't have a lot of opportunities to watch him play live. You know, and, you know, his high school, he played like point center for his high school. And I think he did so much. It was COVID and he like got out of shape from COVID. And it was like really weird to kind of think about how his game would translate and what his role would look like. We knew he was talented. You know, in conversations early, it was really going to be his motor that I think impacted his ceiling early on in his time at Keene. And I can tell you that was never a concern. You know, we kind of expressed like, hey, we think your ceiling's based on this. And we never, ever for a moment, not 1 second, you know, during his time when I coached at Keene State, questioned his motor. You know, he would have a play where he may get a little bit lazy in terms of like, you know, watching the ball or something. But it was never an effort issue with Octavio. And yeah, he did some pretty incredible things that year, you know, relative to even just defense. You know, like obviously statistically had a great season from an offensive standpoint. You know, but came into our program and with his length and size and athleticism, we put him on back-to-back All-Americans, whether it was the LEC championship game or the first round NCAA tournament game against Swarthmore. That's a lot to ask of a freshman. And for a guy like that to step into that type of role, have the impact he had and be able to guard players like that, it was really cool. You know, after that season, you know, I'd never done captains in my time at Keene, but I thought it was the right thing, the right opportunity at that time to help the program take that next step. You know, we named Jeff and Octavio captains, Octavio after his freshman year and Jeff going into his senior year. And just, you know, those guys did a tremendous job of, you know, really taking the player-driven component of the program to the next level, holding each other and holding the team and each individual player holding one another, you know, to the standards that we had established to the group and really making it that player-driven program where, you know, they kind of dictated what the level would be every day and held each other accountable before even we did and made our job as coaches, you know, really easy. And I think you saw that from the consistency that we were able to play with. You know, I think, you know, Coach B, you know, creates a similar model. We were able to kind of do it, you know, in a different way with that group just to develop that consistency and have that type of season where we went 28-2. And the credits to those guys really, you know, with the way they approached every single practice and every single game, it was, you know, an impressive time for that group, and it was a lot of fun to coach, and it was hard to leave those guys because they were doing such a great job. you know, leading the program and the consistency that they played with practice to practice and game to game.
I mean, I think this is the final thought just before we go into our break. But I mean, you had some dogs on that 28-2 team, right? You had Jeff Hunter, Octavio, Nate Seau, my guy Spencer Aronson, right? Like all those guys all contributed to that team success. And I love that you're talking about like just having like a player driven program, because like you see a lot of like the best coaches around all sports, like they're like, yo, the players are on the court playing the game. I'm just here trying to help guide them, right? So it's clear to see, you know, how you built your program at Keene State and why you guys were so good. And like I said, you guys had some really good players that contributed a lot to winning. So it was great to see the product on the court.
Yeah, I think you have really good players, you have really good leaders, you have really good people. Like that's a recipe for success if you can get guys kind of coming together and working towards that common goal and really, you know, on their end, developing standards that they felt like they could hold one another accountable on a daily basis. I was fortunate to be a part of it and really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So we got a lot more to talk about your next chapter at Johns Hopkins. So stay with us while you take a quick break. All right, we're back. So you left Keene State after, you know, the 2022-23 season where you guys finished 28-2, a great year, and you left for Johns Hopkins. And I want to hear about this whole process, like what you were thinking, why you took the job, how it felt, like how you went to the guys and tell them, like, I'm taking another job. You were replacing Coach Loafer, who went for Cincinnati, I believe. So just talk about that process. And I have my own thoughts about, like, why you would do that. So I want to hear from the source, because it was talked about a lot, like, after you took the job, like, what was he thinking, all that. So let's hear about that.
Yeah, lucky to have Coach Loeffler right down the street. He's at Loyola now. So he's like literally like a mile or two down the road. So this is his home for sure, this area. The opportunity came up, and Hopkins definitely functions a little bit different. It was a very fast process. You know, sometimes at the Division III level, the searches can take a long time. You know, there's stuff from a human resource standpoint that can really drag these processes out, you know, and this search was covered probably maybe a bit atypical for Division III searches. Like, I don't know why, for whatever reason, like people were talking about it. And it was out there maybe a little bit more than most. I think that probably helped with how quickly, you know, Jen, the AD here, tried to move with this search, not to, you know, keep things going for an extended period. But Hopkins, obviously, I think everybody knows how good of a school it is. Everyone knows it from a medical standpoint. Not everyone would necessarily know that it's the best Division III athletic department in the entire country. You know, we have two Division I sports here with men's and women's lacrosse. But our athletic department here at Hopkins has won the number one athletic department in Division III, the Director's Cup, for the last 2 years. So that award is given to the team, the department that has the most postseason success of any athletic department in Division III. So we've made more runs in the postseason than any other school in the country. And so obviously to have, you know, teams that are consistently competing and winning national championships, getting to Final Fours, you know, some of the best coaches at our level that work here, not that we didn't have that at Keene State, but the type of people that they're able to, you know, bring in here and keep here and retain here. It was definitely exciting, you know, the administration and the number of people that we have and the resources that we have to support our programs at a place like this, you know, definitely are a bit different, right? We have Big Ten lacrosse, so that's obviously very unique for a Division III program. You know, our varsity weight room is one of the best in the country. You know, that administration that we, the staffing from an administrative standpoint that we have here, was definitely a lot different than what I had during my time at Keene State. You know, when I was at Keene State, at the time that I left, the athletic director position was in transition. So we didn't have a single dedicated administrator when I was at Keene State when I left. You know, and here we have a number of people that support our programs in those type of roles in addition to the AD that really make your life as a basketball coach much easier, right? My job here at Hopkins is really to coach basketball. You know, we definitely, you know, try to contribute outside of kind of our sport in ways that you can from a department standpoint or even across the university. But in comparison at Keene State, you know, I was doing a lot of the sponsorship and fundraising for the department. I helped run the golf tournament for a number of years in my time at Keene State. I was on the enrollment management committee responsible for first year recruitment of all first year students for the college. I was, meeting with athletic administration and the president during that AD transition when I was leaving. I was helping to manage the investments in athletics that Keene State was making when I left. So I'd be getting ready to go play Swarthmore. But I'm also meeting with the president to talk about, those investment dollars, where we plan on putting them, and trying to justify, what sports we might add or what we might do with that money. And safe to say, what I do on a daily basis here is a little bit different than all of those other administrative tasks that I had at Keene State. Like I said, loved my time at Keene State, but definitely a different opportunity here, to have full-time assistant, focus my time more on basketball, to get into a different region, to have the type of support administrative that we have here, to get into the high academic space, obviously one of the best schools in the entire world. So it wasn't an easy decision, but as you kind of weighed those factors and looked at the opportunity that was here, and looked at how good all of the programs here are at Hopkins, it was an opportunity, and I look at it as one of the best jobs in Division III, regardless of sport, but obviously one of the best Division III basketball jobs in the country. So hard to leave, but also a great opportunity that I felt like, as we evaluated it, couldn't pass up.
I mean, 100%. I mean, I didn't know that the men's and women lacrosse team were part of the Big Ten Division I. That's actually super dope. And I always knew that the Johns Hopkins football team, they're really good. And I know
about Final Four right now, baby. Mm-hmm. Final Four right now. Really? They were going to Mount Union. Yeah, they're traveling to Mount Union today.
That's going to be a crazy game.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy one. We've had wild games all year long. The guy who was our starting quarterback to start the season had a season-ending injury. So we have our backup QB that started, senior James Ranallo. He's been awesome. He's had an incredible year. But our defense has really been amazing. It feels like every single game, end of the game is spent with our defense in the red zone having to make a stop. Our game against DePauw, they got the ball at the one with 20 seconds left on first down, spiked the ball to stop the clock, had multiple plays from the 1 yard line to try to beat us. And we ended up getting a stop. They tried to run a play on fourth down, didn't get off in time, got a penalty with a runoff, and that ended the game. So hopefully our defense can hold it down again this weekend. Hopefully it doesn't require another red zone stop for us to win. Hopefully we can get a little separation from Mount Union, not have to rely on our defense in that situation. But I'm sure if that's what happens, I'm sure we'd be just fine with it if that's what it came down to again as well. So hey,
shout out to my guy, BJ Hill. He's the defensive coordinator at
doing an incredible job.
Yeah. I know his dad, so he's doing a good job over there. So good luck.
Yep, first year at the D.C. Yep, first year at the D.C. He's got us in the Final Four, doing an awesome job.
Yep.
That's fire. And like I said, being surrounded by that type of environment where, we had the SUNY Cortland head coach on, and SUNY Cortland has a great athletic program where their teams make, win the SUNYAC and make the NCAA tournament year in and year out. And he talks about how, being part of a motivated and well-known, well-accomplished athletic department, and what it does for his motivations, and how he coaches his team. We want to be, one of the best teams in the department, and we want these other teams to be good too, but it all he says there's a bunch of alphas in the athletic department at Cortland, right? So definitely love seeing when Division III programs can have success across the board.
Yeah, one of the things the AD mentioned to me during the process is that my office would be across the hall from the 2019 national champion in volleyball, next to the baseball coach that was coming off a national championship game appearance. They lost in the last game of the year in the third game in baseball in the World Series. Across the hall from the field hockey coach that's lost in the national championship game four consecutive years. So just the type of success that these coaches have consistently had was incredible. And they've been great partners and great people to work with and learn from. So very fortunate that way. It was a cool way for the AD to highlight the type of success and the type of people that I get to work with by coming to Hopkins.
That's dope. And continuing the conversation about Hopkins, I want to hear a little bit of your insight into, the roster construction at Johns Hopkins, because like you said, it's one of the best academic schools in the country. So how do you look for players, obviously with a specific profile when it comes to academics and stuff like that? And what type of players are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, we are at the top tier of the top tier in terms of the academic profiles that we look for from our prospective recruits. Recruiting is definitely national. You know, it's not like I can just show up in a gym and watch a game and kind of cross my fingers and hope that the guy has, you know, the type of transcript and the type of testing that we look for here at Hopkins. You know, so we're obviously very intentional with our outreach. And, you know, we definitely hear from a lot of different people, given the, you know, the profile of the school and the fact that there are, you know, a lot of people that have, you know, these type of profiles that would have an interest in coming to a place like this. We do hear from a lot of, you know, high school coaches, prospective student athletes, AAU coaches, you know, that understand the recruiting dynamic, that feel like they may have, you know, recruits that could be a fit for us. But it's national. We definitely work a lot with, you know, students and coaches to try to figure out, you know, which guys might have the profile. And then from there, try to find ways to evaluate them, whether it's in film, on film, or whether it's in person at the various tournaments that we'll go to. But we'll travel to all the academic events throughout, all the prospect camps that people host, Ivy Leagues in particular. You know, so recruiting is a challenge, but I think the nice thing is once you find guys that generally may be a fit for your profile, given the academic nature of a place like Hopkins, we're generally going to be at or near the top of your list if this is a place that looks like you can get into. So despite the pool being really small and it being very challenging to be admitted here, once we find guys that are, you know, at or potential, you know, guys that could get accepted into Hopkins, we have a decent chance of yielding those guys given the academic nature of a place like this. You know, and obviously you combine that with the type of success that athletically that we have here and the type of experience that our student athletes have, I think we have a decent chance of getting guys to come here if they are able to get into Hopkins. So challenging in some ways, that pool is definitely very small and working through that pool is definitely a challenge. But once we find guys and target guys that can get in, you know, we feel like we have a decent chance of yielding those guys given everything that we have to offer. You know, obviously the type of success that you have coming out of a place like this, you know, is generally pretty much unparalleled, right? You know, there are some really good schools across the country, but we think we do it as good as anybody.
Yeah. A lot of people kind of think that if you coach at one of these high academic schools like a NESCAC or Hopkins, that it makes like the recruiting harder, which definitely could be true. But I actually think that it doesn't make it easier, but there's pros to it because you can also involve yourself in kids that, you know, might be thinking about going D1, like to a Harvard or to a Yale. Now they're thinking like Johns Hopkins. Yeah. Now they're thinking about like that could be a possibility. So your pool might be smaller, but you can reach, you know, maybe higher level talent.
I do think it's cool that, you know, if a guy can get in here, you know, there's a decent chance that we may be the top choice for that person, you know, which is different than some places, right? You know, like recruiting some guys that we end up getting at Keene, Jeff Hunter, a perfect example. You know, I probably watched Jeff play 40 to 50 basketball games. And then not only did I watch him play basketball, I also went to 7 of his volleyball games, you know, and like a little bit different, right? The timing is different. When kids make decisions is a little bit different, you know? Yeah. So it definitely functions different at each place, but everywhere you go, you have challenges, you know? And I love being at a place where despite some challenges right around it being so rigorous and admission being difficult, we have the 6% acceptance rate that, you know, if a guy can get admitted being the number one in a lot of situations, I think is playing from a position of strength, to your point. Every place you go, there's going to be some type of challenge from a recruiting standpoint. But I do like the opportunity that we have here. And I do think, you know, we are recruiting from an advantageous position.
Yeah. So this past off season, you hired your former player, Jeff Hunter. It's kind of interesting, the parallels. Like, you played for Coach B and then you were on his staff, and now Jeff played for you and now he's on your staff. But I kind of want to hear about this process hiring Jeff, because like we were with him a few weeks before the news came out, and he didn't mention to us anything about coaching. Like, he was still playing D3 TBT and he was looking for like overseas contracts. So I want to hear like when you guys started talking about this might be a possibility, and also how your relationship kind of shifted now that he's on your staff and it's not a player anymore.
Yeah, it's funny. So I very much kept Jeff in the loop as I went through the process at Hopkins. You know, I didn't hide anything at all from him. Like, he was someone that very much knew, you know, what was going on, what was happening, what I was interviewing, you know, kind of as things shifted and it looked like I might get the job. You know, he was one of, obviously, you know, outside of my family, you know, probably the first person that I talked to. And he was the kind of guy, like the kind of person that he is, you know, he was one of the people that very much said, "Coach, like, I don't want you to pass this up because of me. I think you need to take this. And then my goal someday is going to be to come work for you," you know, like, and that was him going into, you know, his fifth year, you know, with that COVID eligibility, you know, him saying that, you know, not sure that everybody would kind of feel that way, just shows you the kind of person and how mature he was at that point in his life. You know, I very much trusted him to have those conversations, knowing they would stay between us. And really fortunate to have that kind of player that was that mature. We were able to have those type of conversations going through that process. So kept him in the loop with everything, you know, and I don't know if he knew it would happen as soon as it did, right, necessarily, you know, in terms of first year out coming down here to work for me. But couldn't be luckier where it worked out that way. You know, definitely thought he might go play overseas, you know, was trying to help him with the process as much as I could from down here in Baltimore. You know, obviously getting connected with the TBT, playing in the TBT, having a couple of those highlight dunks that he had. Thought something might happen there from, you know, an offer standpoint going overseas. But after that tournament, you know, one of my assistants last year ended up leaving to go take a full-time spot in the NESCAC. Noah Tyson, you know, going to Wesleyan. Can't take the NESCAC out of a NESCAC guy. You know, he played at Colby and was definitely excited to get back into the league. Did a great job with us, you know, my first year here, his first year in coaching. He was another guy coming off a playing career and a really good one. Finishing at Colby, scored 1,000 points at Colby, having a great career at Colby. So I was lucky to get him down here, lucky to have him with us here with us last year. But then once he, you know, made that move and I kind of evaluated what we might be looking for, I had some great conversations with different people. You know, after the TBT ended, you know, mentioned to Jeff that, you know, I got to move on this position and do need to hire someone, and, you know, thought like, hey, you know, where are you at? Would you be interested? You know, it was probably the right time to say, you know, it's kind of now or never. If you want to do this, let's do this. I respect the fact if you want to play. And he probably is a little bit similar to me, right? Like, you know, going to Keene an hour and a half from home was like, you know, him leaving the country, right? Like, it was that dramatic and drastic for him. You know, at the end, as he was making his decision, he was considering an option closer to home. Not necessarily, you know, because he thought it was a better fit, but because, you know, it was something that was, you know, closer to his family, and, you know, he did see an appeal to being close to home. So I think he had a similar dynamic where I'm not sure he was ready to go, you know, overseas and travel and be away, you know, to that extent. So I mentioned it to him and, you know, asked him if he was interested. We had some conversations, you know, kind of did, you know, like an interview, you know, going through things as to what it would look like. And was fortunate to have the opportunity to do it. Was fortunate that he was ready to make that decision and decide not to play. You know, couldn't be luckier to have him. You know, I think he's a great guy, obviously on the court with guys, whether it's during practice or, you know, in skill development stuff that we do. And then also just from a leadership standpoint, I think there's, you know, nobody better, right? You know, he's played for me, understands some of those things that I look for in a player driven program. He's been a great resource for our guys to help mentor them that way. And I'd say, how the relationships changed, probably not much. He'll probably tell you that I'm equally as hard on him as an assistant as I was on him as a player. But you know, like, I also, you know, very much, just like his playing days, learn from him every day. You know, like, he's the kind of guy that's got a really unique way about him that is very structured in everything he does, that does have, you know, very strong beliefs and a great approach to the way that he coaches and just lives his life. And he's someone that teaches me something every single day.
I'm just kind of curious, Coach, as someone who wants to get into this business, what do you, like, how do you stand out as an applicant for, like, coaching positions? Like, you know what I'm saying? When you're looking for an assistant coach and whatnot, what do you think, you know, those applicants need to do to stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, obviously everyone has their own unique path, right? Like, there's no one way to become an assistant and there's no one way to become a head coach. And it really is, you know, finding the right opportunity with the right person at the right time. Obviously, I think, you know, being a player and be able to leverage some of the things that you learn as a player is very beneficial. I think that drive and dedication and commitment and that growth mindset is something that a lot of coaches are looking for. You know, like, obviously, I think trying to get away from a little bit in our industry, just like the nature of being a grinder and all you have to do is eat, sleep, and breathe basketball. You know, I think people want, you know, to work with people who are a little bit more well-rounded and are a little bit deeper and not just have environments where like the only thing you can do is coach. You know, I'm a little bit old school with, you know, kind of my life and how I think about hoops, and I try to find that balance and, you know, need people like Jeff around me to help support me. Because I can get lost in the sauce a little bit and get caught up in a season and maybe not prioritize everything I should at times. So it's great to have people like that around me that'll help support me that way. But I think everyone's different. It's kind of finding your own niche and not trying to be something that you're not, but also kind of leveraging the experiences that you have and showing how committed and dedicated to the sport that you are. And also, you know, like that you're willing to grow and learn and, you know, kind of show some ways that you've tried to jump into, you know, growing and learning, right? You know, whether it's as a person, as a player, or kind of getting your feet into coaching, what that might look like, you know, whether it's, you know, softwares, whether it's with recruiting, whether it's, you know, even just in basketball, trying to understand different things and make sure, you know, you're learning how to be a teacher of a game and how to mentor and grow and develop people.
That's great insight. I appreciate that. I want to shift the conversation back to Johns Hopkins. You had a player transfer, Braden Fagbemi. He was a freshman. He was an elite player for you guys last year. So I was just kind of curious, like, how do you replace that production from a key guard like Braden who transferred out? And also, like, how much did you know? Like, did you know that he was going to transfer? Like, did you know that was something that he was thinking about? Can you kind of talk to us about that process for him?
Yeah, you know, I think Johns Hopkins is the kind of place that you come to because of what it is, right? You know, whatever, we're ranked something like a top 10 school in the entire country. As we've talked about before, very difficult to get into. So the type of guys that are coming here, obviously for a great student athlete experience, but, you know, a lot of them are coming here because of the opportunities that it's going to provide once you graduate from here. I think Braden probably came here for those reasons. But then, you know, as he went through his freshman year and as we got into kind of the offseason stuff, I didn't have any idea that he was going to leave us. You know, I didn't know that was a thing. You know, we were talking about, you know, what kind of his sophomore year would look like and how he would grow and develop as a leader, as a point guard, as a player, on and off the court. And, you know, I think as he evaluated his opportunities and, you know, thought about what that growth would look like, he prioritized, you know, kind of the opportunity to go play Division One. You know, I don't know that we'll find that in this high academic space. You know, obviously the world is ever changing in college athletics. So who knows, you know, transferring is definitely, you know, going to be more and more normalized, right? I think we've seen that, you know, the COVID eligibility stuff will go away and maybe you're seeing a little bit less from a grad transfer standpoint, but I think what you will see is transferring will stay normal. You know, I do think at the high academic space and at places like this, I do think, you know, it'll be minimized in terms of, you know, people transferring out to some extent because they're here, you know, for those reasons, you know, for the opportunities that it does give you when you leave. You know, he was probably the only one kind of in the Division III world at a place like this that did transfer in a situation like his. Yeah. And, you know, didn't know, but, you know, supported him through it, right? It is what it is, you know, like as those priorities evolve, you know, you can highlight all the great things that Hopkins is and Hopkins could do. But if his priorities align with taking an opportunity at the Division I level, then, you know, you can't do anything but support him, you know, and it's been cool to follow his season. You know, statistically, he's having a very good year. I think he's averaging 13-6-5. You know, he's the kind of guy with the type of player that he is that you don't replace with one player. You know, he's very quick, very dynamic with the ball. He was a one-man press offense, you know, getting the ball and initiating offense. He was really good for us in a lot of ways. So I don't know that you're going to find a guy that's like a one-for-one replacement for him. So, you know, we're definitely trying to replace him by guys stepping up in different ways, not one person stepping up to fill the role, multiple guys stepping up and doing different things. You know, it's early in the year. I still think we're trying to find kind of our identity as a group and figure out like how to go about replacing him in some of those ways. You know, we have some really good players, but, you know, right now, you know, our guy, John Winley, he was having an incredible season for us. You know, there's a lot on his plate, you know, at times probably too much in terms of, you know, bringing the ball up and initiating offense, but also being the guy to make the play and make the decision to make the shot. You know, so it's finding the balance to take some pressure off of him and figuring out who can step up in different ways to do some of that. You know, so it's been fun to follow Braden, you know, and cool to kind of work through the dynamic, like you said, of replacing him. Because it's not just, okay, Braden leaves and now this guy comes into that role. Yeah. It's can step up in all the different ways and kind of help us with some of the things that he was able to do well for us last year.
Yeah. That's another shout out to you, because like as a coach, your role isn't to, you know, hinder the athlete, your player's first coach. So if he has the opportunity to play scholarship basketball and an opportunity to play Division I high level, he's getting minutes, doing a great job. So like I know that affects your program, but at the end of the day, like he thought that's what's best for him. So like you said, it is what it is, and just support him through it.
But yeah, we want guys here that prioritize everything that we have to offer, you know, and his just shifted enough where it made sense for him to make a different decision. And we can't fault him for that, you know?
Yeah. Respect. So this is going to be the last question. And you guys right now are 4-4. You lost by 2 to Swarthmore, lost by 4 to Eastern, lost by 3 to Salisbury. So 3 out of your 4 losses are 1-2 possession games, which I know that hurts, but kind of, what have you seen from, you know, film that you're going to start improving, or improvements that the team needs to make for the second semester? And also, I know this is your like first recruiting class, so just talk about that and the importance of, you know, this class being able to have a winning season and how that kind of elevates the program moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall we're in a really good spot. You know, I think it's staying true to the process and not being results based. Even that, you know, Wisconsin lacrosse loss that we had, that wasn't kind of that like, you know, small margin from, you know, a final score standpoint. It was a 1-point game with 7 minutes left. You know, that's a team that I think is really good and will compete for a WEAC Conference Tournament Championship this year. Mm-hmm. So we've definitely, you know, we've played some good games, right? We played John Carroll. They were number 3 in the country. Smart. You know, their point guard got hurt in the game that we played, and I know has, you know, an injury that may keep him out for a while. Hopefully not the season. Hopefully it could get him back. I don't know where that stands. You know, but I think when we played those guys, they were one of the better teams in the country, and we generally controlled that game for 40 minutes. You know, so I think our highs have been high. I do think there's been a little bit of inconsistency. You know, we talked about Braden moving on as a transfer. We also graduated 6 guys and had 6 guys kind of move into their careers. So we've had a lot of transition from last year to this year. You know, I think we have some really good players, and I think we've had some really good moments this year. And I think we're good enough consistently to play with anybody. But I do think there's been a little bit of inconsistency with our group game to game. Some of that could be just the different styles that we're playing against. And I think there's also a little bit of complacency during games. You know, like at times we lose our edge and break down in ways that may not necessarily we feel like be true to who we are as a group. So I think we just have to stay true to that process and make sure that we're working the way we need to work every day so that we're building the habits that we're looking to build. And try to focus on the right thing, really develop leaders. You know, I think we're a little bit more normal to what is kind of the pre-COVID program, where we don't have as many fifth-year guys, or at least, you know, we do have a couple of grad guys that transferred in, but not necessarily fifth-year guys in our program that were here for 5 years, that understand everything we were trying to do as a group, that developed the leadership within our program. So it's easy to kind of support that next group. I think it's a little bit more, you know, kind of a traditional program, kind of pre-COVID, where you don't have older guys like that, where we're learning that leadership, where we have lots of guys that are transitioning into either greater roles or first-year guys transitioning into roles as freshmen here with us. So we're going through kind of all of the speed bumps that come with that, you know, new leaders and guys kind of growing their roles and in new roles. So I'm optimistic with the type of people, the type of players, and the type of leaders that we have. We have guys that care. We have guys that work really hard. We have guys that do want to kind of grow in this leadership space. And I think if we can kind of really develop and continue to emphasize the player-driven component of our program to help with the consistency that we're looking to have, I think we really can take some huge steps this second semester. You know, I think we can play with and beat anybody. It's just a matter of finding that consistency game to game and consistency throughout games. And I think our guys have really prioritized that in practice. You know, we've had a cool opportunity since that Swarthmore game during finals, and then kind of transitioning before we play Rowan on January 2nd to focus on ourselves and work on ourselves. You know, we beat John Carroll, then had to play lacrosse the next day and then turn around and play Eastern, you know, NCAA tournament team from last year, 3 games in 5 days without really any practice to kind of focus and work on ourselves. You know, you go from the high of beating a team like Carroll to then having to turn around and play those quality teams in you know, very short turnarounds. And just, I think, got away from some of what we were doing well that made us good against Carroll. So I couldn't be more excited. Going to be process-oriented. Can't focus on the results. If you look at our record, you may think one thing. But if you look at, you know, how we've been able to play consistently game to game and what our ceiling looks like, if we can find that consistency, couldn't be more excited to work with these guys and find that for second semester here.
Yeah, I mean, good luck to Johns Hopkins, because the Centennial is loaded too, like Gettysburg ranked, and then Swarthmore, Franklin, and Marshall, they're always really good programs. So you got a handful, but you're also the leader that can rally those guys to a successful season. But we're going to end.
I don't know who made this schedule a little crazy. We've already played a top 10 schedule. Now we go into conference play and have to deal with all these teams that are leading as good as you talked about. So hopefully we learned a lot from the games that we've played. So it helps us kind of moving forward when it comes to league play. A couple more non-conference games, then we jump right into Centennial Conference play. And we start with Gettysburg. So it'll be a fun way to start league play.
Yes, sir. Well, good luck. And we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. So let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
Let's go.
All right. I always love – this is my first rapid fire question. I always love asking, like, coaches this and, like, hearing their opinions on it. But who are some of your favorite – or, no, funniest players that you've ever coached?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. That's a good one. Who would those be? I think Lucas Hamill would be up there. He's a guy that, like, was literally as fiery as any player I've ever coached. Like I said, his father was the Merrimack coach for a long time. Basketball was in his genes. He was as competitive as anyone. I can remember us, like, really going at him. Like, he had kind of a low moment his senior year. And we had him run a 17 for something, and he got so fired up. I've never seen a person like run like this. I swear, like every breath there was like spit coming out of his mouth. I swear he must have run the 17 in like 42 seconds. He probably could have like held some kind of world record or Olympic record with how fast he ran that sprint. Like those early teams at Keene State had some pretty interesting personalities on them. And we definitely had some guys at WPI through the years. It's tough to pick out individuals. But I'll also say Coach Bartley, right? Like, everyone sees him as this fiery guy on the sideline. They don't see him as the guy that, like, my entire sophomore year referenced Anchorman at every single practice and made jokes every single day. So there's a lot of players I'd throw on that list, but Lucas definitely being one of them, Matt Ozella, like those kind of guys, like early in my Keene State days. But I'll put Coach Bartley and a guy that was an assistant at WPI, Ryan Flynn, up there with anybody. The dynamic between those two, whether it was my playing days or whether it was when Ryan came back as an assistant coach at WPI in the full-time position, those two guys are about as funny as any human being I've ever seen. So,
I wouldn't expect Coach B to be a big Anchorman fan. That's a great movie.
Yeah, we had lots of throwback quotes. He'll still come out with a reference here or there to this day.
All right, next rapid fire question. I just wanted to see if, like, you could shout out any, like, your biggest inspirations in basketball. Like, who's helped you the most, you think, throughout your coaching career?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously the coaches that I've played for, and, you know, Coach B that I played and worked with, you know, whether it was Coach B, whether it was Bob Foley, who I mentioned that just retired from St. John's Shrewsbury as the all-time winningest coach in Massachusetts State history. I think he's got like 971 wins. Wow. Just absolutely amazing. You know, there are some guys in Massachusetts that are really good high school coaches. Like, my assistant played at Andover. Dave Fazio is a great high school coach. And he's like, I wonder where Coach Faze is relative to Coach Foley. We looked it up. Basically, he would have to, like, duplicate his career. He's been doing it for, like, you know, whatever, 20 years. It has 470 wins or something crazy. And it's basically you'd have to redo exactly what he's already done all over again. And that put it in perspective, I think, for my assistant here. AAU coaches, those kind of people. And then, you know, my father. My father passed a few years ago. But he's, I think, the reason that I got into hoops the way I did. He never played in high school or in college, but he always loved basketball. And he always used to talk about, like, in Worcester, how much he'd go to the park and play. And it was never like the biggest compliment was never like how good I got. The biggest compliment that I ever got from him was I worked way harder than he ever did in basketball. Like, it didn't matter to me, like, how good I got necessarily. It mattered to me, like, if he respected the amount of time that I put in to develop myself as a player. And he was the kind of guy that always pushed me to, you know, get into coaching, you know, apply for jobs, try to, you know, kind of transition into full-time coaching, because that's always what my passion has been. And he very much valued education, you know, sent me to a parochial school growing up, sent me to St. John's Shrewsbury, you know, sacrificed to send me to WPI when I could have gone tuition free to a Jesuit school because my mother worked at Holy Cross. So he's always prioritized my experience and an academic experience. And that definitely was something, you know, as I evaluated this Hopkins opportunity that I thought about, he would, you know, very much want me at a place like this, you know, given his values and how he raised me growing up. So my dad, despite, you know, not being a player and never, you know, really coaching me other than like, you know, youth summer leagues growing up, was probably as much, if not more, of an influence than anybody else.
Love that. Rest in peace to your dad. But I definitely love that he was a big inspiration to you, Coach Kane. And this is going to end it with a rapid fire question. Just to confirm, so you grew up in Worcester, right? You grew up in Worcester?
I grew up in Webster, Mass. Yep. And okay. Went to high school in Shrewsbury and then college in Worcester. Yep.
All right. So I got to hear this then. Give me your ranking of like the best basketball, like cities/towns in Massachusetts. Cause you got like Springfield, you got, you know, Brookline, Worcester. I want to hear that.
Wow. I mean, like obviously Boston's had some dudes through the years, right? Like in and around Boston, you got some guys, you know, Bruce Brown now, like, you know, guys that are like studs, right? So like I probably give the edge as a starting point to Boston. But if we exclude Boston, because that's the major city, right? You know, like I can think of like Springfield dudes. So there's Travis Bester guys, right? Like that have been pros that are really good. But you know, Worcester to me, like in if you use Worcester, like even from just a high school basis, you know, with the Jimmy Moores and the Mo Hortons and like those kind of guys that I grew up with, you know, either playing against or watching play. I definitely give, and this is biased because I've coached some really good, like this is like biased based on my playing experience more than my coaching experience. I give Worcester an edge over Springfield only because I think of like the passion that I have around those guys that I played against and watched when I was a player. The guys from Springfield that I coached will definitely hate me on that one, right? Like, you know, Ty's going to come at me.
I'm going to be tight, yeah.
He's going to be upset. He can get buckets against any of those dudes from Worcester, right? but then there's been like kind of random, like small pockets of places, right? Like Acton, Boxborough. Like not everybody's going to like have Acton, Boxborough jump it out at him as like a basketball hub. But I'll give Sam Longwell and Joey Flannery a little bit of a shout out, right? I had Sam Longwell as a player at WPI. We brought him in, and Joey ended up at Babson. I coached against him in my time when I was at WPI, and then he beat us when I was at Keene State in the Elite Eight, the year that Babson won the national championship.
That was a good game.
That was a good one. I thought we lost our edge a little bit after beating Christopher Newport the night before, but part of that probably was how good Babson was. You know, those guys were really good, and Joey was as good as anybody. You know, two-time National Player of the Year, just an absolute stud. Great to see him back at the Division III level, you know, coaching at Babson again, right? Nice to see him back and where he started it all after spending a few years at Villanova. Yeah. So, yeah, kind of random places like that. The Springfields and the Worcesters jump out at you. But I'll mix in the Acton Boxborough shout out there for Longwell and Flannery.
I respect it. Well, we're going to end this episode with a starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be your ideal Keene State players. So like only the players you've coached at Keene State. And I want you to know that we did this with Jeff and we were recording like in front of people and they were like tight at Jeff for his lineup. So I'm just going to put that caveat out there now.
Yeah. I think I can slot three in that people aren't going to fight me for. So you got Ty, you got Jeff and you got Octavio, right? So you can slot those guys in and I don't think anyone's going to argue those three. And then if I put in context, my fourth, I think it's going to be hard to fight my fourth as well. My fourth is Matt Azzella. So Matt was like a 16-12 guy his senior year. When Ty played with Matt, Ty deferred to Ozzie. So if we needed a bucket, Ty would find Ozzie and not be the guy to take the shot himself. So if Ty, who averaged 20 as a senior, is the all-time leading scorer, is deferring to someone, I'm not sure how anyone in Keene State can argue that, right? Man, and now a fifth. Gosh, this fifth one becomes pretty difficult. And
what position is this fifth person, by the way?
That's the question, right? So, like, I could, like, if I need a five, I could go with, like, a random one that not everyone's going to think I'll throw out there with Jeff Lund, who is really good. You could go with a 7-footer and Nate Howard. that held the all-time lead in block shots until Jeff broke that. Nate will tell you it's because he had 5 years. but let's see. And then, like, you got Lucas Hamill as the point guard. But you know what? Like, part of this may be biased given the relationship that I have with this guy. So I think everyone will probably fight me on this one. But I'm going to go with the guy that I mentioned before as kind of being like the guy that led the players my first year. You know, like, he was such a culture guy and fits the dynamic of kind of like what we ultimately kind of work towards again later in my time at Keene State of making it player driven. And that's Nate Stitchell. Like, Nate came from Mercy Division II, had an incredible senior year. He was as tough, as physical, as talented. He was as team oriented as anybody. And really, I think, was the glue to that group when we had all those injuries of us staying together. So I'll throw Stitch in at the fifth. If I didn't, he probably would never talk to me again. So maybe that's the reason why I made him number five, or at least that's the excuse that I'll make.
I like it, Coach. I mean, that's, you coach some studs at Keene State. That's a really good lineup right there. But
yeah, we had some good ones. I could have named some other guys. There were some really good players that I coached through my time at Keene. But that's a pretty good five right there.
100%. Well, that's going to do it for another episode. Not even D2. We definitely appreciate your time getting with us over the break. That's a lot of love, and looking forward to see what Johns Hopkins has for the rest of the year in the future.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Good luck to you guys as well. Thanks for having me on.
We're going to finish this episode with another segment of Only in D3, where Ruta and I give our experiences as a Division III student athlete, mostly a funny story, but this week, you know, we were on break, so maybe not anything specific, but more just like how break is as a Division III student athlete. And if you have any funny story, feel free to share that.
I think break, you know, especially playing D3 basketball, it's fun. It can be a little boring for sure, but you know, being here for two to three weeks with your teammates, some of your closest friends that you're going to have, like, that to me is really dope. Like, you get every day where you're going to practice, you chill in the locker room, and then you get food after. And how the card situation works with us is that we have like a tax exempt card. So the coaches will give that card to like one of the, like, he'll give it to like Luke Bergault, who's on the staff here and who gets food with us and stuff like that, to have him like take care of it and like get the receipt and all that. But that's always fun, like doing stuff like that, like meeting up for dinner and whatnot. But
so you guys are all getting the same food? Or,
well, it's different orders, but like we'll be like, all right, let's all pick one spot together. Okay, so like, yeah, last night we went to Venice Pizzeria, which is like this local Italian spot. But I think, you know, it's not really a story, but I think the biggest pain or biggest memory I have from coming back for like winter break was my freshman year. When I came back, the first 2 days I was here with Griffin, my freshman year, they didn't turn the heat on in the freshman dorms. So it was.
That's brutal.
I got to, you know what? This is my resolution. I got to work on my cursing. I got to work on my cursing. That's my resolution. But it was so cold. It was so cold in there. I slept with a beanie, wool pajamas. I was cold as hell.
And you cursed again too, by the way. But the H word, we not count as a curse word?
Nah, dog. H, you know what?
Nah, that's brutal though. No heat coming back after Christmas. Mm-hmm. Let me see. What I'm trying to think if I have any funny. I don't think I have a funny story through this week, but I'll just say like what life's been like. So we get back the day after Christmas, and that's always brutal. Like, just spent mad time with my family, maybe some closer friends, and you kind of want to spend a little bit more time at home. But day after Christmas, you're right back to the grind. And then, so bro, I'm a vegetarian. So when we were going on our trip to PA, we get subs like before the game. That's like our pregame eats. And as a vegetarian, it's super hard to, you know, enjoy a sub because the main parts of sub are like turkey, hams, anything like that. So yeah. I'm living on veggie subs the past 3 days, and I don't ever want to eat one of those again. But also, like, we when we're just at school and we're not like traveling, we get $23 a day.
Oh, a day? Oh,
yeah. That, bro, but I'm saying like you can't. What am I supposed to? A meal costs $20. So how am I supposed to like survive of 23 days? But or $23. But it's definitely, I agree with what you said. Like it's fun. It almost makes you feel like you're in the league at times. Like you, all you're doing, like I'm getting paid to, you know, just chill here, play basketball, and travel here and there. But that's our segment for Only in D3. Definitely, if you like that segment, subscribe to us. Go follow us at Not Even D2 on all platforms. And
thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.